down and another woman take a dump, and the goddamn smells of shit and bile were just too much. She covered her nose with the back of her left hand and let the vomit burst from her mouth. She puked so much, her eyes started to tear. Afterward, she wiped off her face and washed her mouth out several times so the stomach acid wouldn't chew up her enamel. It sucked having to bail on her weights partner, but it also sucked having probable food poisoning. She wondered if Patricia had the same bug. They had eaten the same thing at least once yesterday, grilled chicken and vegetables, which had never made them sick before, but who knows? As her second baseman, her partner in the middle infield, they often thought and moved in tandem. 8:51 a.m. Brock had never been at Whole Foods this time of morning before. It was way less slammed with rubes than at lunchtime. It sucked balls having to skip weight training, but after vomiting, she needed two bananas, reverse osmosis water, and a protein shake to replenish, along with an extra protein shake for Patricia to make it up to her. While she was reading the ingredients on an N.W. Gratz brand vegan protein smoothie, she saw something weird written amid the nutritional facts. The phrase, sweet pepper jelly, all caps, large type. Something about it made her shiver. As she set the protein smoothie back on its shelf, the three strange words leapt out at her. She turned the bottle around so the front faced out instead. This was some creepy-ass bullshit for sure. Still, fear is a choice, she reminded herself, and why choose it? She made up her mind that the strange words on the bottle didn't exist and never existed. It was just her nutrition-starved brain shorting out on her. After a moment, she picked up the bottle and looked at it again. The bold text was gone, replaced by the usual crap about soy protein, isolate, and organic cane sugar. Sure as shit, she was going hypoglycemic from the food poisoning and not having eaten. Her temples began to ache. She needed to get something in her system, stat. Then Brock saw someone down the aisle who she hated, and it gave her a huge sense of relief. There were Lolo McCaffrey's thick braids and patchouli oil smell, crouched down by the nutritional bars, her moon face staring at the label of a Clif bar, like someone who can't read. Lolo was the strength and conditioning coach for the team, who made everyone do hot yoga and meditation, and was covertly seeing senior shortstop Tara Sarrazin, the player who incoming first-year Brock Jajelski had beaten for a starting job. Seeing Lolo right here, in the same store at the same time, Brock considered the possibility that either she or Tara had somehow poisoned her dinner yesterday. She wouldn't put it past that pair of jealous skanks, that's for sure. Lolo, Brock said, looking down at Lolo. She was easy for Brock to intimidate, and Brock felt it was good for her soul to intimidate coaches who preached loving-kindness and mindfulness. Her headache and confusion instantly disappeared as she approached the shorter woman. "How's it hanging?" "Hello, Drzelski," Lolo nodded, not looking up from the Clif bar. "So," Brock said, "what do you and Tara think you're doing?" Lolo looked at the ground. She could never look Brock in the face. "I know what you're going to say, and I don't see how our wedding affects the team in the slightest," she said, looking Brock in the face for the first time. "Wedding? Wow." First Brock had heard of this. She'd only just heard a few weeks back that they were dating, not that she cared. "Don't you have to go to Vermont or something?" "Well, that's the plan," said Lolo, who seemed to realize that she had just volunteered more information than she intended. "If you kids are planning to elope, why is Tara on my dick all of a sudden?" "Tara is in Wyoming right now having a very important conversation with her family. I seriously doubt she has given one thought to anything you're doing." "Then why are you here? You stalking me?" "I didn't even notice you there until you came over and initiated your unbalanced discourse about dicks, which has totally uncentered me, so thank you." "Christ," Brock said. "These hippie yoga chicks were the goddamn worst no matter who they fucked." "You should think on what you're saying and doing," Lolo said. "You're putting negative energy into the world that's cycling back. That's what happens. It cycles back." Yawn. Now that she was close to 100% sure that Lolo and probably Tara had nothing to do with this, she wanted to wrap this shit up and get on with her day. "You would know," she said. "Now if you'll excuse me, I have to replenish my GI tract." "Morning sickness? Ha, fuck you." Lolo looked at Brock and smiled a little bit. I've been a doula for 5 years. You seem pregnant to me. I guess 5 or 6 weeks. Bullshit, said Brock, and walked to the checkout. Crunchy little moon-faced bitch actually got under her skin. Brock almost admired her for it. It was the first time since she'd met Lolo that she felt in her gut that the woman had any authority. And now, it scared her a little. 9:39 a.m. Brock was in the ground floor women's bathroom at Chapin Hall with her pants to her knees, but her whole day wasn't fucked yet. Yes, this was a substantial detour, but she still had an hour to make it to her last Micro One discussion group before the final. According to her schedule, it had been 33 days and 16 hours since her last period, so a worst-case scenario was possible, and she needed to figure that out stat. The bathroom was one of those white-on-white jobs with white tile on the floor and a frosted window that had been painted shut. The toilet paper was so cheap you could read a magazine through it, and the place smelled like mildew because of the self-conscious dipshits who took a shower in there every day and trapped all the humidity inside a room where the window couldn't open. But it was just the place for an operation as stupid as a secret pregnancy test. Patricia, of course, freaked out when Brock texted her about what was happening and insisted on skipping her own weight training just to help Brock with the lame-ass pee stick. This was unnecessary, but fine. In the road games against Michigan and Purdue, Patricia had seen Brock do far more embarrassing things, like overthrow the catcher on a play at the plate and call off the left fielder on a fly ball that ended up going halfway to the warning track. Wow. Tara and Lolo are getting married, Patricia said, watching Brock take the pregnancy test from Osco out of its box. Sure didn't see that coming. Who gives a shit? Brock said. She held the white plastic stick under the light. I'm gonna get pee all over my hand. Can't I just pee in a cup and put it in the cup? You ever been to a lesbian wedding?
Nope.
I hate all weddings. I like the dancing part. Even the chicken dance. I will totally dance the chicken dance.
Ugh, get the gun.
Brock was down on her hands and knees, looking through the white cabinet under the sink, which was cluttered with waterlogged rolls of single-ply toilet paper and cheap, non-organic cleaning supplies. I wonder if there's like a paper cup somewhere in this bathroom I can pee in. Patricia gently kicked the back of her friend's shoe. You'll touch a bathroom floor, but you won't pee on your hands? Urine is sterile, you know. Okay, fuck it, Brock said, pulling her underwear to her ankles and sitting on the toilet. Hand me the goddamn stick. There was a knock on the door. It was the only private bathroom in the entire building, so it had its regulars. It'll be a little while, Brock called out. It's okay, I'll wait, the tiny female voice answered. It was Brock's roommate, Caitlin Pickett. She only ever used this bathroom.
Wouldn't if I were you, Brock said. But she could see from the shadow in the opaque door glass that Caitlin hadn't moved.
Brock thought she heard a burst of music from the pocket of her balled-up sports pants just as she began to pee. I think it's my phone, she said. Patricia looked surprised. Is it that French guy? Tuna can? I doubt it. Let me pick it up, Patricia said, reaching for Brock's pants at her feet.
No, don't, Brock said.
She stood up and leaned forward as she was peeing, getting urine all over her hand, the stick, and the toilet seat. God damn it, I told you not to touch that, she shouted as she stood, set the stick down on the sink, pulled up her underwear and grabbed the phone from Patricia. The phone buzzed in Brock's hand. It read, incoming call, Amy Jo Drzelski.
Not a good time, Mom,
Brock said as she answered.
Your cousin is missing, her mom said.
Sure she is.
Brock was used to this kind of crap. Her mom had been a master choreographer of anxious micromanagement since Brock could remember. When Brock and her brother Randy were kids, their mom used to wake them up at 5:30 in the morning for family road trips to avoid traffic. There were safety latches around the house until she was 11. There was no TV and sure as shit no candy, pop, alcohol, or smoking. She ironed bedsheets and bleached underwear and cleaned the bathrooms at least twice a day. The menace of her manic perfection made it impossible to relax and fucking forget having friends over, unless they enjoyed being bum-rushed by a Sears vacuum. Brock was sure that was why their art professor dad, Wojciech, cheated on their mom once when they were little. Who wouldn't? And ultimately went on an indefinite sabbatical to Malta, why Randy escaped into music and drugs, and maybe even why Brock signed up for every sport and pointedly excelled at the dirtiest one. Brock was, by careful design, nothing like her mom. But with her mom's own family out of her grasp, she now meddled with her relatives instead. And the struggling little Torvald clan was less than 2 miles away, helpless against the force of her help. Eva ran away last night. Nobody knows where she is. Fiona and Jarl are losing their shit. How do you know she ran away? Because Fiona threw away all of her habanero plants. Holy Christ. I guess she made some kind of oil out of them that she was using as a weapon at school. She sent 2 boys to the hospital. Do you know what happens to her at that school, Mom? Those little shits probably had it coming. She got suspended by the principal. Well, anyway, Randy thinks that there's a chance that she might be coming out your way, so maybe you should go out and put some signs up or something. I kind of got my hands full right now. But your cousin is missing. Kids do this kind of shit all the time. I'm sure she's fine. A small fist pounded on the bathroom door. Are you just talking on the phone in there?
Ah, shut up, Rock said.
Patricia got up from the floor and returned a volley of slaps on their side of the door. Brock returned the phone to her ear. Sorry, not you, Mom. I think you're being selfish and lazy, Brock's mom said. When I get a hold of your dad in Malta, I'll tell him that you're not helping the family. Look, I'll help as soon as finals week is over. Okay? I can't fail spring quarter and lose my scholarship because my cousin ran away from home for a couple of hours. I can't believe I raised such a selfish daughter. Keep me posted, Mom. Love you. Brock pressed her phone's keypad, ending the call, and shook her head. Christ, neediest goddamn chick in the world. She looked at Patricia, who was standing by the sink, with a sad, scared look on her face. What is it? Patricia handed Brock the pregnancy test. Brock stared at the 2 pink lines in the result window. Well, fucking A, Patty. Patricia put her hand on Brock's shoulder. Brock leaned against her friend's waist and let her friend cradle her head. Holy fucking shit, she repeated, as Patricia held her and squeezed her shoulder. A limp, tiny hand slapped the bathroom door. The small shadow at the foot of the door frame was now joined by a larger one. I got the RA with me, Caitlin said. 10:01 a.m. Goddamn cataclysmic devastation, pretty much. Brock threw the pregnancy kit and the box it came in into the trash of the dorm across the street from Chapin. Her head was absolute pudding. She could hardly remember where her micro class was or what day the final was on, or anything else imminent and relevant. She tried to recall her schedule and where she was supposed to be at that moment, but her thoughts separated and vanished like April snowflakes. She would terminate her pregnancy, no question. She didn't have time for this. She was a scholarship Division I athlete and a 4.0 student. Her job was to lead Northwestern to the Big Ten title, qualify for the 2004 Olympic team in 4 years, and then go to the Kellogg School of Management for a business degree. That was the plan. No time for serious boyfriends, no interest. Which didn't mean that she didn't have a scorching desire for a halfway decent fuck every once in a while. But for starters, she couldn't even remember which of her 2 spring quarter sex partners could have been the father. Luc Richard, the French tennis player whose junk was wider than it was long? He went back to France and who cares? Or was it Unieski Suspatus, the shortstop for the Kane County Cougars, who just got promoted to Daytona in the Florida State League? It's not like she wanted to call either of these dudes and be like, hey, are you sitting down? They didn't sign up for this. And neither did she. Did a condom break? She couldn't be on the pill because it messed with her system too much, so she compensated in other ways. Once she made a guy wear 2 condoms. Of course he hated it, but give a male animal a choice between wearing 2 condoms and going home with blue balls, and imagine what they do. Could a guy not notice when a condom breaks? Could she? There were times she took the Plan B pill just because she thought one might have broken. That Unieski dude always flushed his condoms afterward. Was it him? As she entered the lobby of Chapin, where some lame-ass freshman boys were setting up a beer pong table, her phone buzzed. It was a text message. Sweet pepper jelly, the screen seemed to read. Brock stopped walking and took a deep breath. She glanced away from her phone and looked back.
The words were gone. Some oaf in a Star Wars shirt was trying to get past her with stacks of blue plastic cups. "Excuse me," he said.
"No," she replied, not getting out of his way.
She looked at her phone again. A brand-new Nokia 3210. Almost everyone on the team had one. Text messaging was way easier than calling. It couldn't be busted already. She looked through the message history. No sweet pepper jelly. Whatever that was about. As the big nerd with the plastic cups finally tried to squeeze past her, she put away her phone and shoved past him toward her dorm room.
10:10 a.m. To Brock, the humanities dorm was like an icicle up the glory hole. She put it down as her fifth choice of five. Only after getting to school did she learn that anyone who put it down as any choice got stuck there. Some had it as their first choice. Every one of those dorks was as big a rube as Caitlin, who was wearing a stupid combo of a pink Chicago Bears t-shirt, she probably couldn't even name one player on the Bears, and white high-waisted shorts. She was lying on her bed reading some dumb piece of Victorian literature.
"Just to give you a heads up," Caitlin said, not looking up from her book, "my sister Elodie's coming here in 2 days, and I told her she could have your bed."
"Fuck that," Brock said, tossing her micro-notes into her old JanSport bag. "Your sister's not staying in our room, and sure as hell not in my bed. End of discussion." "The RA said it's okay after you locked me out of my bathroom."
Brock dropped her bag on the floor. "I have so many problems with that statement, I don't know where to begin. For starters, Caitlin, you're rich. Put her in a hotel." This was true. Her dad was a corporate lawyer in Minnesota, and they lived on a lake in Orono, which were facts Caitlin seemed proud of when boys were around.
"I'm not rich.
My family is relatively successful, but I am not personally financially capable of buying hotel rooms for my guests."
"Well, maybe she can spring for it herself. It's what adults do."
"You're just being selfish because you're being inconvenienced. You can't stand one tiny little inconvenience in your life, ever."
"This isn't tiny," Brock said, standing in the open doorway. She was running late, which meant that she was not going to get to class as early as she usually did.
"You're trying to kick me out of my bed during finals week. How about I kick you out of your bed?
You already owe me 4 nights in here alone for the 4 nights I had to sleep outside in the hall because you were boning some dude in here."
"To be continued," Brock said, stepping out of the room and closing the door behind her. The entitled little twat kind of had a point. But whatever her past grievances, however, there was absolutely no reason Caitlin's sister couldn't stay in a hotel during finals week. And who visits during finals week anyway? The sisters of rich girls who don't give a shit about their grades because they'll never have to worry about money in their entire lives. Northwestern's roommate assignment policy was sadistic. Incoming first-year students on financial aid were always paired with someone not on financial aid, and it only served to teach Brock how cheap rich people were. Caitlin went to Vail over spring break, and she didn't even ski. But then she came back a week later and used all of Brock's seventh-generation detergent without asking. And now she was giving away Brock's bed like it was hers to give. Fuck these rich kids in the face.
12:50 p.m. To Brock, both the Micro 1 and U.S. history discussion groups were an ambient fog of vaguely familiar nouns. She could concentrate on only about every fifth word. Walking out of Kresge Hall, she felt even worse than before. Brock sort of didn't want to turn her damn phone back on after the weird thing that happened earlier. But if her cousin Eva had actually run away from home, which seemed likely, Brock knew she might get a call from her, especially if she wasn't with Randy. She had one text message and 2 missed calls. The voicemails were from Mom. She'd endure them while walking to the Stucco Palace to have lunch with her teammates. The text was from Patricia. "Hey, BD. Everyone here supports and loves you. See you soon. Heart." She thought about texting back something smart-ass like, "Tell everyone to think of me when they rub one out," or something equally profane and Brockish, like she normally would when confronted with sincere sentiment. But this time, she just went with, "Thanks." 12:59 p.m. After missing both her morning workout and her first lunch, Brock felt her blood sugar falling off a goddamn cliff, and she could smell the turkey grilling even half a block from the Stucco Palace. Ann Richards, their 6'3" starting pitcher from Texas, no relation to the former governor, opened the door. Pony by Genuine was playing on their stereo, and Anne instantly started dancing alone on the hardwood floor as Brock followed her inside.
"Come on, BD," Anne said, as Maya Cromartie, their junior center fielder, joined Anne in the living room.
The best players on the team lived in the palace, and it had been that way as long as anyone could remember. Brock would be living there now if Northwestern didn't have the dumb rule that first years had to live on campus.
"I can't. I've been sick all day," Brock said.
She waved at first baseman Tangela Bass, who was typing on her laptop with headphones on, and walked into the kitchen to put her arm around Patricia, who was standing over the stovetop, sprinkling a tiny pinch of pungent diced garlic onto the almost-done turkey patties.
"So what's the latest?" Patricia asked.
"I don't even know where to start," Brock said. "But I made up my mind. I want to get rid of this thing."
Patricia put her arm around her younger friend.
"You're 100% sure?"
Brock nodded.
"Eat something," Patricia said, and handed Brock a plate and lifted the lid over a steamer basket full of broccoli and carrots. The fresh garlic on the turkey burger smelled to Brock like the most amazing garlic in world history. And at the table, Maya Cromartie was pouring habanero sauce over all of it as if it were gravy on mashed potatoes. Brock winced just watching this perverse offense to the sanctity of a healthy lunch.
"Do you hate the taste of food all of a sudden?" she asked.
"We're going to the Hell Night tonight," Maya said. "Gotta prime myself." It sounded to Brock like a stupid frat theme party, but no one in the Stucco Palace, to Brock's knowledge, had ever been in a fraternity house in their lives.
"Explain," she said.
"It's at the Truth down in Wrigleyville. They have a Hell Night where they put ghost chili into everything. We're all over that shit this year."
Anne Richards twirled into the dining room and grabbed Brock by the shoulders.
"Are you coming? You should totally come."
"You gotta sign a waiver just to order the food," Maya said. "People had to go to the hospital last time."
"It sounds awful," Brock said, taking another bite of her plain brown rice.
"Besides, I got a French oral final at 9. While I'm standing there trying to remember verb conjugations, I don't want my sphincter to feel like a ditch fire."
"I heard spicy food can cause a miscarriage," Patricia whispered to her. "Sure is cheaper than the alternative."
"Nope," Brock said. "I want some dude's hairy knuckles up inside me, ripping that thing out for real."
She looked over her silent teammates. "Anyone know a cheap clinic off the red line?" 1:26 p.m. As she walked down Noyes toward campus, past the giant chirping trees and sturdy 100-year-old homes full of 20-year-olds, the sky was the bright, eye-stabbing silver that she hated on game days. The beautiful morning had evolved into a classic Midwestern scorcher, and there was no relief from any incoming low-pressure front from Minnesota. She felt that stupid unborn thing turning around in her belly, or she thought she did.
Would it get heat stroke if she did?
Oh, fuck that, though. There was no easy way out of this. Anne Richards knew a clinic that charged $445 for a medical abortion done prior to 9 weeks of pregnancy. Of course, Brock's blood type was ORH negative, so she'd need to spend an extra $65 for Rogam. Problem was, even if she totally scrapped her diet and regimen for the next 2 weeks, which she was not doing, she still wouldn't have $510. She would get some stupid evening restaurant job in downtown Evanston and work however many days in a row she needed to make the cash. She'd just crash on the couch of the Stucco Palace until then. There was no way she'd take this fetus home to Iowa. If her mom found out, that'd be the end of everything. In the lobby of Chapin Hall, 20 people were clustered around the ping-pong table like ants on a wet Dorito. The finals week beer pong classic was in full swing. The kids inside acknowledged her, but no one invited her to play. Not that she would have. She hated beer. Even so-called good beer, and the prospect of drinking warm Keystone Light with a dirty ping-pong ball floating in it had about as much appeal as eating gum off the floor of a bus.
But why didn't they at least ask? Bunch of space dockers.
The door to her room was ajar, which was weird. As Brock nudged it open with her foot, her roommate stared at Brock from her bed, eyes as big as catcher's mitts, and held a finger to her mouth and said, "Shh," as she pointed to Brock's side of the room with her other index finger.
"You shh, camel toe.
Brock said, because Caitlin did have serious camel toe in those dumb high-waisted shorts. Then she saw what Caitlin was pointing at. Brock's cousin Eva, 8 years younger but taller than Brock, was curled up, sleeping on Brock's bed, wearing black jeans and the bikini kill shirt that Brock had just bought her for her birthday. 1:35 p.m. Caitlin stood in the hallway, her hands on her hips, enjoying the hell out of the moment. "So I see how it is," she said. "Your cousin can visit during finals week, but my sister can't?" "I didn't even know she was coming here," Brock said. "Maybe you should check your email. The poor girl takes the bus all the way from Iowa and you're not even here to let her in the building?" "Do you know who let her in? I let her in. That's the kind of person I am."
"No, it isn't," Brock said.
"I don't suppose she came out with enough money for a hotel room, did she?"
"She's 10. No, 11. So, no, let's assume she didn't."
"Well, then, if she gets to stay here, then Elodie does for sure. Look, I'll talk to her. It'll be one night tops, and maybe not even."
"That's not what she said."
A wet ping-pong ball rolled down the hall toward them. A guy in horn-rimmed glasses and a red pearl snap shirt ran after it, but he stopped when he saw the women talking.
"Oh, hey, Caitlin," the guy said. Brock recognized him. It was Brian something, or maybe Brady something. He appeared to be staring at Caitlin's camel toe.
"Is this your game ball?"
Brock asked, walking over to the wet ping-pong ball and crushing it under her right foot.
"Fuck you," the guy said.
He looked past them, took an unsteady step back, quickly said, "No, not you, sorry," and scrambled off.
Brock looked in the direction of the guy's apology. Eva was standing in their doorway watching the guy dash down the hall as he complained to his buddies about the bitch who had busted their ball.
"I've heard worse," Eva said.
Brock walked over and hugged her.
"You know you're in deep crap, right?"
"Yeah, I don't care," Eva said. "Let him sweat it out for a few days."
"See," Caitlin said, "a few days?"
"We're going on a walk," Brock said, leading Eva down the hall.
"Now."
The beer pong game went silent as the cousins walked through the lobby. 1:42 p.m. Behind Chapin Hall was the official campus rehearsal and practice space building for music students. Everyone called it the Beehive because during school, the building emitted an atonal assemblage of strings, horns, and keys through its windows. Brock guessed that some imaginative people once likened it to the pleasant buzzing of insects. But to her, the racket sounded like ass, so she called it the Ass Clown Palace. Today the milieu of Ass Clown Palace was ideal for drowning out their conversation so none of the nosy dorks in her dorm would get the dirt on her. She and Eva sat in the grass on the south side of the building, and in her head, Brock tried to rationalize getting only 45 to 60 minutes of study time today for tomorrow's French oral final. She was already getting an A in French. The oral final was only 20% of the grade, and she could probably ace it with minimal prep. The U.S. history one was going to be much harder because it was 50% of the grade and she had to memorize a bunch of shit for it. She tried to put it out of her mind as she watched her tall cousin uncurl on the grass, staring into the punishing white sky like she was watching a movie. What a fascinating creature. How are they even related?
"Shirt looks great on you," Brock said.
"Thanks," Eva said.
"What's Bikini Kill?"
"A punk band from Olympia, Washington. You'd like them. Our head coach listens to them."
"Cool. And thank you."
"So when did you get here?" Brock asked.
"The megabus dropped me off at Union Station at 6:50 a.m. I wasn't sure if you'd be up yet, so I took the train up to Ann Sather and had Swedish pancakes with lingonberries."
"How did you know about Ann Sather?"
"I read about it on the internet, and it sounded cool. There's this other place I want to go to as well, but it's not open yet. Have you ever been to a chili bar called The Truth? Can we go there later?"
"Yeah, I've heard of it. Anyway, look, I love you. And I know you want to piss your mom off, which is fine with me, because I know what she did to your plants," Brock said. "But this is not a good time for me."
"I didn't know where else to go," Eva said. "Anyway, you also told me a couple of months ago I could come visit you in Chicago sometime when it wasn't softball season."
"Oh, yeah, I did say that, didn't I? Well, you've happened to come during finals week, and things are kind of nuts right now. And also, I'm sorry, but I don't even know how I'm going to feed you or anything.
I got some avocados and organic almond butter and other random stuff, but not a ton of it.
It's all right. I got $168. I can figure out my own comestibles.
Wow, that's a chunk of change. Birthday money?
Birthday money and chili sales. And then I won $10 from a guy at the bus station.
How'd you do that?
He wasn't eating his jalapeno peppers that came with his sandwich, and I said, I'll eat them. And he said, I bet you can't. And I said, I bet you $10 I can eat them all. And I did. She dug around in her pocket and pulled out a $10 bill.
See?
Nice. Have you done that before?
No, but I could. I can eat things way hotter than jalapenos.
For money? Brock asked.
1:56 p.m.
Happily, Caitlin was out of the dorm room, off doing whatever the hell she did on campus, so Brock could type her computer passwords for Eva without worrying about her coups of a roommate getting them. Eva was looking around the room as she waited, taking in the decor on Caitlin's side of the room. It was the usual college girl bullshit. Clever and inspirational quotes pasted on pastel-colored strips of construction paper and taped to the wall, along with a framed poster of Robert Duhonneau's Le Baiser de l'Hôtel de Ville that Brock had seen in no fewer than three other dorm rooms.
Dormitories are even cooler than I thought they would be, Eva said.
They're like a prison, but the sex is worse, Brock said.
How come you don't have anything like this on your side of the room? Eva asked.
Brock did indeed have something on her side of the room. That year's Big Ten softball schedule. Because I don't want my room to look like a Hallmark store, that's why, Brock said.
Eva walked over and looked at one of the cutout quotes taped on Caitlin's side.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. John F. Kennedy, she read.
Total bullcrap, Brock said, getting up from her computer and turning the chair around for Eva.
Okay, I gotta study for a final and go to a class. Go ahead and look up a bunch of places where you can work the crowd.
Do you have Netscape? Eva asked.
Netscape is for dorks. Use Google. Maybe search for Spicy Food Chicago or something. Just log out of everything when you're done. I'll be back around 4.
Okay, Eva said, smiling at her older cousin. Brock gave the back of Eva's head a light slap and dashed out. She decided to go to the main library, a giant concrete thing built on Lake Michigan shoreline marshland, which, because they didn't account for the weight of the books inside, was sinking into the ground by a few inches every year. Too bad it had the best study alcoves outside the business school.
1:59 p.m. Walking through South Campus, down a chalked-up sidewalk that hyped campus a cappella groups in a stupid battle of the bands, she passed the rock, a 5-foot boulder on a patch of dirt boxed in by a hedge, and a foot-high retaining wall. The rock was one of those shitty campus traditions, repainted every couple of days by some student special interest group. Brock liked this school for its softball team and its academics, but hated typical college stuff like this. She wouldn't have given it a second thought today either, but except for what the rock said. Sweet pepper jelly. Brock stared at it, looked away and stared again. This time the message wasn't going anywhere. She turned her head and looked back again, and there it was, still. Sweet pepper jelly. Was it actually there, this time? She waved at a woman passing by, a hunched-over, frumpy English major type with thick glasses. Brock demanded that the woman tell her what was on the rock, which freaked the frumpy chick out. She instantly assumed that it was a hidden camera joke, set up to make her look stupid, and scuttled away. How do people like this get through life, viewing the world as something that was constantly out to get them? What was in it for them to think like that? Brock stopped a too handsome jock-looking guy wearing a pink polo shirt and board shorts. These confident types were usually straightforward in a pinch. He sighed, like he was disappointed to be stopped on the street by a woman who wasn't his type, but at least he was helpful.
Sweet puma belly, polo shirt said.
Brock looked again. It did indeed say sweet puma belly.
What the fuck is that? Brock asked.
It's a jam rock band. They're in the Battle of the Bands, polo shirt said, walking away. Now she noticed that the phrase Battle of the Bands was painted on the front of the short retaining wall.
Get some glasses, babe. She stared at the stupid rock again, just to make sure. Up until now, she didn't think she was going nuts, but she was beginning to suspect that perhaps she was, and it made her deeply sad. Her phone buzzed. It was her mom.
"Yeah, what?"
Brock said. "Have you heard anything?" her mom asked.
"No, I haven't."
"Your dad's coming back from Malta to help the family."
"Have you spoken with him?"
"Well, I can't get a hold of him yet, but when I do, I'm going to make sure he's on the next plane out of there."
"Do you even know if he's in Malta?"
Brock's father had left on a year-long sabbatical when Brock was 15. That was 4 years ago.
Don't go there again with me.
"Whatever. Look, I'm sure Eva is fine. Give it a few days. She'll come back." "She could be raped and murdered in a few days. You're just trying to get out of helping me. It's all about you, isn't it? It's all about you, all the time."
Brock hung up.
She reached into her backpack, pulled out half an avocado from its plastic wrap, hurled a perfect strike at the U in Puma, and walked to the damn library, the sun burning the top of her blonde head. 4:15 p.m. Viewed through the window of the Purple Line train, the southbound Howard stop on the L was crowded, but less so than the northbound side. Clustered with the first bloom of suburban commuters weary from their early mornings and afternoon caffeine and blood sugar crashes, it was 93 degrees outside, which meant it was like 110 on the train, but Brock didn't mind her cousin's head leaning on her shoulder. The sincerity and plainness of the gesture was so rare and wonderful. It reminded Brock of the day she first met Eva, a day that her mind otherwise left alone. Brock was the one who held Eva for hours as all of the adults cried and ran around and made phone calls. No one thought to comfort Brock, but it didn't matter. That day, she poured all of her strength into that little baby, and she held on tight to her, whispering again and again that it would be okay, and Eva didn't cry once the whole time Brock had her. 11 years later, her cousin's head on her shoulder, she could have held her like that again, even on a train that smelled like hot metal and strange male sweat. She could have put her arm around Eva and kept her close and safe, all the way to 95th Dan Ryan and back again, on an infinite silver loop. As they clattered into the Argyle station, Eva raised her head, looked around, and began digging in the giant black backpack at her feet. What was in that thing? "I want to go to this place," Eva said, pointing to a name on a list of restaurants, ranked in order of their inhumanely hot cuisine. "Hell Night at the Truth." After already telling her teammates there was unequivocally no way she'd ever set foot in the Truth, Brock really didn't want to run into them there, especially when she was with her kid cousin. One of them might accidentally bring up the pregnancy or the abortion. Brock knew that she could deal with this fetus thing quickly and efficiently, and Eva, who looked up to her so much, would never have to know. A big part of her was afraid that Eva would think less of her if she found out. Maybe because that same part of her now thought less of herself. "That'll be open late. Let's go to a few other places first. What's next on your list?" "Jack Cermak's Tap Room. It's off the Logan Square stop. They have something called Circle of Hell Wings. When they bring them to your table, they ring a bell and play a song. And if you eat an entire order, you get your name and picture in the ring of fire."
"How do you want to play this, then?" Brock asked.
"Well, we order them and then bet someone that I can't eat them." Brock shook her head.
"No, you're going to get full from wings after one bet. We got to get several bets out of each location."
"I can probably go vomit somewhere or something."
"Nah, screw that. You said there's a bell that rings every time there's an order?
We'll just go to the table with the bell, watch them try to eat one, and then say, 'I bet this little girl can eat one.' That way, we don't have to spend any money."
"I detest being called a little girl, FYI," Eva said, moving slightly away from Brock.
"I know. You're 11 now. But you should try to play younger. It'll work to our advantage."
Eva looked at the dirty floor.
"I suppose."
"So what's my cut?" Brock asked. 50%?
"Maybe 40%, Eva said.
Brock laughed. "What do you need 60% for?"
"Well, I'm the one actually eating everything, right?"
She had a point.
Eva stared out the window as the train whipped by the windows of a brick apartment building.
And back home, I need lots of stuff. New plants for sure. My mom said she'd let me grow anything except hot peppers. Are you okay with that?
Eva shrugged.
I don't know. I said no at first. But I was thinking about it on the bus, and I was like, how much hotter can I make them anyway? It's like something dumb a boy would do, you know? Just try to grow the hottest pepper that no one can even eat? I mean, I want to actually use them in recipes.
And this last batch I made, I don't know. I do kind of want to grow other things.
Like what?
Maybe fruit? I'm thinking about trying to make my own homemade vegan sorbet or something.
That'd be cool. Where'd you get that idea from?
My dad actually mentioned it.
They being good to you?
Brock realized that she had uttered the awkward and potentially revealing question without thinking. There was an agreement among the family never to discuss Eva's origin. Her birth mother was apparently the worst woman in world history. But Eva, staring out the window, didn't seem alarmed.
Sometimes, I guess, when they're not throwing away my plants, she said, they're just so, I don't know, normal. They're too tired all the time to do much. But we hardly like any of the same stuff anyway. Their tastes are just so plebeian.
Brock smiled. She loved her young cousin's vocabulary.
Pretty much everybody feels that way about their parents, she said, hoping it canceled out the earlier statement. But you know, they did get you that new grow light for Christmas. And didn't your dad drive you to that hot pepper convention in Madison?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, for a kid, you're really smart and motivated. I think it kind of intimidates them sometimes, to be honest. But I know they love the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Brock was seeing Eva at a low point.
Absolutely.
But she remembered the previous Christmas. Eva didn't see it, but Fiona and Jarl were so happy while they watched their daughter unwrap the grow light they'd bought for her. When Eva saw what it was and squealed in delight, Jarl started crying. Brock knew how expensive that gift was for them. Amy Jo had tried to give them some money to help pay for it, but Fiona and Jarl refused. They wanted to earn and be accountable for the happiness of that wonderful, strange little girl they were raising. They wanted to know for themselves that they could make Eva overjoyed.
I guess I still love them, Eva said.
She suddenly turned and looked at Brock. What are you going to buy with your share of the money?
Brock shook her head. I'm not even going to get into it right now.
The rush hour express train whipped through an unfamiliar north side L stop. The car rattled, and its violent motion caused the bodies of the young dudes in the aisle to absorb the shock into their nonchalant sways, making them look like people who were about to dance and instantly change their minds.
5:15 p.m. Yep, Jack Cermak's Corner Tap was the eighth circle of hell. In a gentrifying neighborhood like Logan Square, setting up a sanitized, overpriced bar to look like a cheap small-town dive was just plain sick. They even had old signs on the walls for beer that they didn't serve. And Brock asked, old style, grain belt, Schmidt, special export. Of course, the place was still filled with flat-screen TVs, each tuned to sports, and it smelled like French fry grease, beer vomit, and orange-scented disinfectant. This all made Brock feel like retching, which made her think of the last time she vomited, which made her think of her damn fetus. They sat down in an oversized wooden booth and ordered a vanilla milkshake, Eva, and a side salad with no dressing, Brock, from a waiter in bib overalls. They waited for the bell, which didn't take long. As the trumpets of Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire burst over the loudspeakers, two members of the waitstaff came out holding sparklers, and a chimney red platter of steaming bright orange chicken wings was brought to a table where two pudgy adult men sat, ties loosened, shoes shiny. Brock knew their kind from Des Moines and around Evanston. Just two more people who didn't try hard enough at anything in life to make any kind of difference to anybody or anything. Ordering these chicken wings would probably be their highlight achievement for the month. Almost everyone in the restaurant was watching their table, so Brock felt certain that they hadn't noticed her sizing them up. The dude who ordered the wings took one bite of the first one and dropped it on his pants, chugging water as everyone laughed. The man was crying and shoving a napkin in his mouth when Eva walked over to the table by herself.
"Excuse me," she asked. Are those really hot?
The guy spat the orange and white napkin from his mouth and nodded. These wings are from another planet, kid.
Eva tried to keep her expression steady. I bet I can eat one.
The two guys looked at each other and laughed. No way, one said. Where are your parents? Asked the other.
Brock saw Eva point to her and waved back from her seat a few booths away.
The two guys smiled at Brock, and she took it as her cue to walk over.
How much would you give me to finish one? Eva asked Napkin Guy.
I think you should leave these nice men alone, Brock said. Those wings actually look really hot.
Yeah, they're no joke, Napkin Guy said.
I'm serious, how much? Eva asked.
Brock tugged on Eva's arm. Come on, these aren't like the ones Mom makes at home.
I'll put down 10 bucks, Napkin Guy's friend said, but you gotta eat the whole thing.
20 for 2? Eva asked.
No way she gets past the first one, Napkin Guy said, looking at Eva.
I'll even eat more than 2, Eva said.
No, you won't, Brock said. You're going to get sick and they're going to take all our money.
Their strategy was working. Napkin Guy now looked like a man who thought he smelled blood.
Okay, then. Let's do 40 for 4. You girls got 40 bucks?
40 bucks? The guy's friend asked him.
It'd cover our tab, Napkin Guy said.
And his friend nodded, pleased with the reasoning.
The waiter, the skinny young dude with a dark beard and a red plaid shirt, walked over and positioned himself between Eva and the table. His name tag read Dane.
How's everything over here? Dane asked, smiling professionally, putting his hands on the table. You enjoying the circle of hell wings?
You ever see this girl in here before? Napkin Guy's friend asked Dane.
It was a savvy question, Brock thought.
Dane shook his head.
We don't typically allow minors to eat these wings, Dane said. Where's her parent or legal guardian?
Here, Brock said, stepping forward.
Dane seemed impressed.
Are you willing to sign a waiver?
Brock shrugged and put $40 on the table.
If she is, this is all on her. She's got to learn one way or another.
Okay, Dane said. He pulled a piece of paper and a pen from the front pocket of his apron and handed it to Brock. She doesn't need to sign it, just you.
Afterward, Dane took the signed waiver back, folded it, and picked up the money from the table. He'd evidently done this kind of thing before. And this is the pot right here? 80 bucks? What's the bet exactly?
Napkin Guy pushed the plate of wings in Eva's direction.
She has to completely eat 4 wings. If she does, she gets the money. Otherwise, we do.
I'm going to go grab her milkshake, Brock said.
Nope, Napkin Guy said. Nothing until she's done with the wings.
Now the two guys were getting edgy. The sooner they started this, the better. Eva climbed into the booth as Napkin Guy made room. Eva looked at the assembled adults.
Just tell me when, she said, looking at the plate of simmering orange chunks.
Okay, go, Dane said.
Eva picked up the 4 wings in turn, and with the beautiful focus of a woodpecker boring a hole, she completely cleaned them back to front in just over a minute, setting down the fleshless bones in a neat little row.
Holy shit, Brock said.
No kidding, Napkin Guy's friend said.
They were a little hotter than I expected, Eva said, turning to Napkin Guy. I'm sorry for doubting you. These were the real deal.
Napkin Guy stared at Eva.
Hustler, he said, not being funny.
Dane handed the 80 bucks over to Brock.
I think this belongs to you guys.
Brock took the money, nodded, thanked everyone for their tolerance, and pulled Eva safely away from the unhappy men and back to their own table.
Jesus, Brock said. I had no idea.
You didn't think I could win? I thought you were just being a real good actor.
Brock handed Eva $50.
Well, here's your 60%. You owe me 2 bucks.
Those wings weren't actually the real deal, Eva said, pocketing the money. I was just trying to make him feel better.
7:39 p.m. Eva and Brock made $180 at Jack Surmac's before complaints from the nosy waitstaff and whiny-ass sore losers forced them out. Then they made a quick 5 bucks at the famous Everyone's a Wiener hot dog stand in Andersonville just for taking a bite from a fire dog. Eva actually took 2 bites. Because that's just who she was. After travel and expenses, Eva had almost $90, and Brock made about $70,
and the big score still awaited them. For an hour, Eva had been begging to go to Hell Night already, but Brock wanted to wait until it got closer to 8, figuring it would be late enough to miss her teammates. Those girls were just like she was, early-to-bed types who were up doing squats at 6 a.m. because they were focused on what mattered, which reminded her. On the way to the Berwyn L stop, and on the train all the way to the Addison stop, and while walking to the truth on Clark, Brock made Eva quiz her for the 19th century U.S. history final using flashcards she'd made. "President from 1853 to 1857, Eva asked. "Franklin Pierce, Democrat. Who did he defeat in the election of 1852? "Winfield Scott, Whig Party. Vice President, William Rufus Devane King. "Are they really going to ask you that tomorrow? It's a final on the whole century. I have to be prepared for everything." "I think you're going to do okay on this final. Ask me another one." "What's this line of people for?" A ribbon of people, mostly husky white dudes, lined one side of Clark Street. Brock looked up ahead. The line wound into the doorway of the Truth Kitchen and Barbecue Pit. Brock looked at a guy standing near the front. He had dirty leather clothes and beady eyes, and looked as if he stress-tested motorcycle helmets for a living. "This is the line for the truth?" Brock asked. "The hell you say?" beady-eyed man said. Behind him, an eager-eyed frat boy type in an American Eagle polo was more of a help. "Yep, sure is," he said. "Been here 2 hours already. Sign up in there and get in line." Someone behind him said, "The line goes all the way to Grace Street." Brock turned to Eva and was about to say, "Looks like we're screwed." But Eva was already bolting into the restaurant, past the maitre d' station, and into the crowded, sticky mayhem of the truth on Hell Night. 8:10 p.m. Even on a regular night, the truth was intolerable. The floor was coated in sawdust, music that could only be described as cock metal blasted on the sound system. Christmas lights flashed out of sync at a headache-inducing pace, and the walls were covered with faux homey wooden signs that said shit like, "You are never too old to drink too many six-packs," and "Free beer tomorrow," and "Ladies 18 to 30, no shirt, no shoes, no problem." And now the place was at, or quite possibly in excess of, the fire marshal's maximum capacity, the majority of whom were men, loud, beefy, tattooed, openly leering men, choking down their first bites of the truth triple X ghost pepper chili, pummeling their open mouths with full steins of pissy lager, screaming, bellowing, swearing, gasping, crying. Eva was calm, surveying the room like a walk-on first-year outfielder looking for her parents in the stands. Brock grabbed her cousin's arm. "We're going to get thrown out of here," she said. "The line is for a table," Eva said. "We don't need a table for what we're doing." "Oh, look, I recognize those people from your wall calendar." Brock looked where Eva was pointing. Patricia, Tangela, Maya, Ann Richards, Ann's gay friend Nate, and starting junior catcher, Rachel Thunder Rhodes, a wide-hipped Nebraskan with a left arm that nailed 46% of attempted base stealers, sat around 5 mostly untouched styrofoam bowls of chili, cramming bread into their mouths and drinking milk and water.
"You made it,"
Patricia said, running across the room to hug Brock. "Is this your cousin? Come join us." And so Brock had to. She introduced Eva to everybody, and once they had jammed into the booth, withstood a volley of questions about why she had changed her mind and joined them, and wasn't she supposed to be studying, and all of that shit. "I didn't know your cousin was finally visiting. What have you been doing?" Patricia asked. "How much will you give us to watch her eat some of that chili?" Brock asked. "This chili?" Maya asked. "I can hardly eat a bite of this chili." "Yeah, how much would you bet Eva can't eat 2 spoonfuls of it?" 2 spoonfuls, Maya said. "Better have some milk ready. How much?" Maya looked at the chili. "I'd pay $10 to see her try, but I don't think anyone that size can handle that." "I don't know," Tangela said. "I'm out." $20, said Rachel Rhodes, "to eat, chew, and swallow." "I'll do 5, Patricia said.
I think she can do it, Ann Richard said. I'm not betting against her.
I don't gamble, said Nate.
Money on the table? Eva said, putting 35 of her own dollars down. Maya passed a white styrofoam bowl over, and Patricia grabbed a clean spoon from the cylinder in the middle of the table. Eva took it and immediately scooped up a spoonful of chili.
Oh, my God, I can't believe she's actually going to do this, Patricia said.
How old is she? Tangela asked.
11, Eva said.
Get a big, heaping pile on your spoon, Rachel said.
Christ, Rachel could be a bitch.
To Eva's credit, she plunged the spoon back in without protest, presented a mound of steaming red and brown chunks, and thrust it into her mouth. For the first time all night, Brock saw that Eva was in evident pain. Eva pulled the spoon from her lips as color ran to her face, and she slowly moved the chunky chili around in her mouth. She closed her eyes, and the lumps disappeared from her cheeks and crawled down her throat. Her tongue poked from her mouth and did a full, slow circuit around her lips. She opened her mouth and her eyes, exhaled, and immediately ate another heaping bite.
Fucking hey, Rachel said.
I told you, bitches, Ann Richard said, leaning forward to give Tangela Bass a high five, and both women who hadn't bet against Eva high-fived her in turn. Other than that forced show of solidarity, Eva gathered the money without a word or change in expression.
How was it? Brock asked.
Whoa, Eva said.
Could you eat more?
Eva nodded enthusiastically. But give me a minute. Then came the barrage of questions about where Eva developed her tolerance for hot spices, where else they'd been that night. Everyone was somehow equally amazed that she ate the Circle of Hell wings at Jack Cermak's, and how much more she could eat, because the team totally wanted to soak this room of gross, cocky men for everything they had.
Before we start, Brock asked, where's the crapper in this hellhole?
Through the gift shop, Maya said.
Of course it's through the fucking gift shop.
8:31 p.m. The Truth's gift shop was worse than Brock had imagined. First of all, there wasn't a straight path through it. It zigzagged like a duty-free store in an international terminal, forcing you to reckon with the words, the truth, on every conceivable piece of made-in-China crap known to humanity. Shirts, caps, mugs, steins, keychains, license plate frames, trucker hats, vests, and belt buckles. They also had a full line of truth sauce, truth rub, truth spice, and something else that caught Brock's attention. Brock walked to the register. How is this sweet pepper jelly? The young tattooed woman behind the counter nodded. All of the food products here are actually pretty decent. They're made locally in Batavia. Have you had this?
I've only tried the green. The green is awesome.
Okay, I'll go back and get the green. By the time she returned to the register, there was a line. The guy right in front of her was the American Eagle polo guy from the line outside. His face was flushed and sweaty, his eyes looked bloodshot, and he was holding a golden ticket in his hand. Brock wasn't going to say jack shit to this weirdo, but he turned and looked at her.
Oh, hey, Miss Cut in front of everybody, he said, not unfriendly.
I was meeting a group of people here, Brock said.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so? I thought you were going to start a riot out there after you bolted in here like that.
I don't fucking care, Brock said.
I like your attitude, the dude said. He stepped forward to the now empty space in front of the register and handed his ticket to the woman behind it.
How quick did you finish it, Benny? The woman asked, taking the ticket.
3 minutes, 4 seconds, Benny said.
What's your size?
Men's large, Benny said, and when the woman handed him a black T-shirt, he put it on over his polo. The shirt read, I can handle the truth's hell chili on the front in a garish font, and Hell Night, the truth, Chicago, Illinois, on the back.
You just got here, Brock said. You've already finished a whole bowl of that chili?
Ah, it's way weaker this year.
What are you getting?
Aw, oh, that stuff is the bomb.
Glad you approve, Brock said, handing the green sweet pepper jelly to the woman. It was then that it occurred to her that she should have just stolen the shit. Why was she buying it and supporting this awful establishment?
Do you know who makes the best sweet pepper jelly in the world?
Brock hated it when people, guys especially, asked the kinds of questions that only they evidently knew the answers to.
I don't care, she said.
It's this woman down in New Mexico, but you gotta go there in person. She won't let you order it online.
I'll be sure and ask you all about it, Brock said.
That'll be $5.10, the woman behind the counter said.
Have you handed out a lot of those T-shirts tonight? Brock asked.
No, that's the first, the woman said.
Brock was actually going to turn and congratulate Benny, sort of, but he was gone.
8:37 p.m. Brock sat in a Pepto-Bismol pink toilet stall in the otherwise empty woman's bathroom and opened a jar of green sweet pepper jelly. Even with the sound of AC